blind and frail. He had trouble breathing and could no longer speak. Geffen knelt by the bed and took Ashman's hand. "You're going to recover," he said. "This is going to be cured. A miracle will happen. You have to believe, just as you have inspired so many people to believe in magical things. You must never give up. And I want you to know that you are surrounded by people who love you." They couldn't be sure that Ashman heard or understood the words, but his eyes filled with tears. A week later, Ashman died. He never saw the finished print of Beauty and the Beast. Lotch, Ashman's partner, recalls that, "It was such a satisfying time for Howard, working on those films. He felt like he'd lucked into a format that fit him best. He loved the theater, but was sometimes frustrated by it. But here, this film company indulged him. And the timing was perfect because he was just hitting his stride. He was really just getting started, and he was grateful." Katzenberg was devastated by Ashman's death. Since discovering the Disney archives, he'd felt Walt's presence, as though he were an angel watching over the rebirth of animation. He felt that Ashman had joined Walt as a guiding spirit. Katzenberg prayed that he'd find someone to replace him. He later arranged an auction at Sotheby's of original art from Beauty and the Beast. Disney donated the proceeds to the gay men's health crisis in honor of Ashman. Ashman's spirit seemed to hover over the wrap party for Beauty and the Beast, held in October at the El Capitan Theater in Hollywood. Katzenberg made sure to invite Lotch and Ashman's mother, though Lotch could not go. Everyone who'd worked on the film gathered at the historic theater, restored by Disney for the first screening of the finished film. It had deliberately been kept under wraps during the previous weeks to prevent premature gossip and word of mouth. But after the still unfinished Beauty and the Beast became the first animated film to open the prestigious New York Film Festival in September, and was greeted with thunderous applause from a sophisticated adult audience, everyone at Disney believed they had a potential hit. Before the film rolled, Roy and the director spoke, lavishing praise on the creative team, especially Ashman and Mankin. Then Eisner took the stage to announce that, "I decided today to build a new animation studio on the lot. An older building would be torn down to make way for a lavish new building to be designed by Robert Stern." Wild cheering broke out among the animators. They were jubilant. Just a few years ago, they'd feared for their jobs. Now they would be returning in triumph from their exile in Glendale. Peter Schneider had been leading a search for new space for the animation division and was close to leasing a building being vacated by Lowry's restaurant chain about 5 miles down the freeway from Burbank, or so he thought. Katzenberg looked stunned and angry. It was obvious to all that Eisner had told him nothing of any plans for a new building. Once the excitement subsided, Beauty and the Beast unfolded on screen. Several of the musical numbers were interrupted by applause, and the movie earned a standing ovation. The mood was euphoric at the party afterward at the Sheraton Hotel. The Eisners and the Disneys had not stayed for the screening, but left early to have dinner together at the Sheraton before the party, leaving Katzenberg behind. During the meal, Eisner gloated over how he'd upstaged Katzenberg with the announcement, or so reported two agents who overheard the conversation from the next table. A month later, Beauty and the Beast opened in theaters to rapturous reviews. Janet Maslin wrote,